Thank you, Steve. We had last week a very interesting talk by Rodrich, who was discussing the order by disorder mechanism with the thermal fluctuation on the Kagome lattice. I will try to address the same question but with quantum fluctuation and see if the conclusion could be the same. My collaborators on that work are Laura Messio, Bernard Bernu, and Grégoire Mesguich. So, Rodrich said us, this, I just recall the general idea, the classical Heisenberg Hamiltonian of the Kagome lattice, so h bar equals zero, you have the Heisenberg Hamiltonian, it can be written as the sum of the square of the spin on a small triangle there, the double product could be written that way. And if you want to minimize the energy, you just have to put your three spin at 120 degrees on a triangle. But as there is only one corner of triangle shared between two adjacent triangles, there is a lot of degrees of freedom that are left. And I show one of kind of degree of zero energy degrees of freedom, but there is an infinite number of soft mode as this one, and an infinite t equals zero degeneracy of this model. In fact, order by disorder, we put some simplification on that physics, and Rodrich has explained to you that, in fact, order by disorder, by thermal fluctuation, you just try to figure out if the entropy effect could stabilize one configuration, and that the entropy, in fact, is proportional to the density of state near the ground state, and it appears that the entropy, the entropy effects, first of all, stabilize the planar configuration because in the planar configuration, the quantity of fluctuation outside of the plane are very soft, and the density of state near the ground state is inversely proportional to the stiffness of the ground state you are looking at. And in fact, this is the reason why, in the first step, at a temperature of the order of 10 to minus 2 J, the coupling constant, it is the planar state which is selected. And this is identical for any planar configuration of three spin at 120 degrees, whatever the way you organize your three spin. But in the harmonic approximation, and Rodrich has explained to us that when you go beyond the harmonic approximation, in fact, the square root of three is selected. And now this same kind of problem has been addressed in the quantum limit at t equals zero in the past in one of the rest. Approximation, that is with spin wave calculation. And when you do spin wave calculation at t equals zero around this coplanar state, you have essentially the same result. That is, amongst planar states, the square root of three order wins. Planar state are better than non-planar state, and amongst the planar states, this square root of three wins. It was done first by Shubukov in some nonlinear spin wave calculation, and there has been another approach different by Seppas giving essentially the same result. And in fact, if you think of it, it's not totally a surprise, because in some sense, in these two approximations, you are checking the same thing. In this thermal, when you are looking to thermal fluctuation, you are checking the softness and of the state, and more soft it is, more the number of excitation, density of state near ground state is larger. When you are doing a spin wave calculation, what you are add to the classical energy, it's a zero point of the spin wave, the zero point energy of the spin wave. But this zero point energy is smaller when the wave are more soft. And so in my point of view, it tests these two pictures, this classical one and this quantum one, test essentially the same thing. And it's not a surprise that you have the same kind of result. It's not easy, it's beyond the linear approximation, but in any case, there has been different approach and everybody agree with that. But the question that I will try to address today is the following. Are these planar good states the good departure point to look at quantum phase? I'm not sure of that, and it's more my knowledge in atomic physics that led me to think this, and I will try, and there, we have new results that might perhaps say it's not a good point. And this new result, the first part is that we recently were aware that the classical instability of the Kagome lattice at the Eisenbahn point, which is here, it's a phase diagram. Here you have the point where there is only the nearest neighbor red interaction. You are there. It's a highly degenerate point discussed by Rodrigue. And after that, if you add the second neighbor interaction, the green one, second neighbor interaction, and if it is antiferromagnetic, you move to a planar state which is called Q equals zero, which has three spin at 23 degrees and a magnetic unit cell of three spin. If it is ferromagnetic, you move to another planar state which is coat of three state. Also three sublattice magnetization and a magnetic unit cell of nine spin. But we become aware that if you add a third neighbor interaction across the whole of the hexagon, this blue interaction, then there is another instability which appears immediately for an infinitesimal parameter. And this instability is towards, in the classical limit, it's a non-complanar phase. I just put here on the lattice, the magnetic unit cell of 12 spin, of 12 sites, let us say, and here I picture the direction of the classical 12 spin. So you see it's a complicated object, it has the symmetry of a cuboctahedron. Let us look at details. Nearest neighbor and spin are at 120 degrees, so everything is good from that point of view. If you look at spin on a given triangle, they form a plane. But if you look at spin, for example, these three spins there, green, black, and purple, green, black, and purple, they are at 100, they form a cone, they are not coplanar, and there is a scalar chirality. These two, three of them. So the scalar chirality is not on the small triangle, it's on the hexagon. And in fact, if you try to do thermal fluctuation on this system, it's not the ground state, it cannot compete with planar state because it's extremely stiff. If you try to twist the spin, there is a counter reaction of all the order around him, and the system is stiff. And so there is not a lot of thermal fluctuation around this one, and it cannot win, compete with the planar state. But this kind of short-range arrangement from a quantum point of view might be different from the other, and I will just give you a hint why I was thinking that. And I think perhaps it might be the clue to the small size exact diagonalization spectra of the Kagome, here is one of them, which has been a mystery for a long time. Here are exact eigenstates of Eisenberg model on the left on the triangular lattice, on the right on the Kagome lattice. the number of spin are approximately the same, so the discretization should be the same up to now, the bandwidth is the same. On the left you have 28 sites, on the right 27. And all the symmetries, spatial symmetries of the lattice are respected in that exact diagonalism spectrum. We might not the difference, especially in the singlet setter. Indeed, I should say first that the square of the total spin is a good quantum number, and when you sort the exact eigenstate of this Hamiltonian, you can sort them by the energy, which has been done there, from the ground state to more excited state, and sort them with respect to the value of this good quantum number, which is S plus 1, S being the total spin of the exact eigenstate. Here it's the total spin S equals 0, here the sector with total spin S equals 1, S equals 2. Here it's S equals 1/2, S equals 3/2. So there is a big difference between these two spectrum. And one of the first feature of this big difference is the fact that between the spin gap, that is between the ground state of the S equals 0 and the S equals 1 sector, in that case you don't have, well, you have only one eigenstate, whereas in the case of the Kagome, between the ground state with S equals 1/2 in this odd model and 0 when there is an even number of spin, in this spin gap there you have a lot of low-lying excitation with the same total spin as the ground state. And this was something which was a question, and we do not understand it, and we tried to figure out different kind of explanation. Nothing was going on, was correct, but perhaps we have now an idea of what could be the explanation of this small size spectrum. And I should begin by explaining how you could understand very simply why you have here three levels, here one level, here three, here five, and so on. It just, let us go back to the classical picture. The classical picture, you have three sublattices. And I can consider in the first time that there is no fluctuation at all, and I have three, and to describe this spectrum, I have only three big spin, which are the addition of all the spin of the red sublattice there, of the blue sublattice, and the green sublattice. So I have to do the addition of three big spin. And with three big spin of length n over 6, what can I do? Only one singlet? You just add to the first two one and do the addition, and you have and you will find that you are, at the end of the day you have only one singlet, and after that three triplets and so on. So you might think of these things in that way when you have only three sublattices. But when you have more than three sublattices, it's no more the case. It's no more the case. And if you try to do the addition of these 12 spin 1/2, for example, you will find very easily that you can form 8 singlet. It's very simple. With 4 spin 1/2, you add 2, you form 2 singlet. And after that, you group your 12 spin in 3 bunches of 4, and you have 2 to the third singlet. And in fact, all the singlets you are looking at, if they have this kind of correlation, that is, antiferromagnetic correlation to the nearest neighbor, second neighbor, third neighbor, because all these correlations are antiferromagnetic with 120 degrees here, 120 degrees here, and 180 degrees here. All these short-range correlations are in fact favorable in that case. And so you might expect that if 8 low light energy singlets are below the first triplet. So it's a very strong assumption, and I have not put any quantum fluctuation at that point. I only say that the spin-spin correlation were of that form at short range. And in fact, when I look back to the exact spectrum, of the n equal 12 level, I saw that there were 7 Lola singlet in the below the first wavelet. Is it possible to explain the 237 singlet below the spin gap in the n equal 36 sample by that way? It is possible. I have not done the full sophisticated analysis. Probably I will do it. I've been a bit lazy. It's rather complicated, but it can be done. But it might be an explanation.
Good question. So the exact spectra that you showed were done with J3 equals 0.
J2, J3 equals 0. It's only G1. Yes, sure.
But the prediction of this insight would be that when you turn on J3, you'll push away these singlets?
Yes, it's okay. It's a case. Yeah. But I have no picture to see, but it's a case. But we see it only when the size is large enough, when the size of G3 is large enough in exact diagonalization. Point 2. We need point 2 to see the effect.
May I ask another question? So if you say that the ground state with at finite J3 is this, it doesn't have soft modes, then are you also then saying that if you look at low temperatures above that ground state, there'll be a first order transition? When you have a competition between high entropy states?
I will discuss this point further. So, seeing that, I've been doing a bit. That's the short-range quantum fluctuations, which are absent in usual semi-classical approach, might contribute to an energetic stabilization of the T1F Heisenberg spinning equation. We did not add a lot of tools that was possible to use to go from the classical limit to the quantum case. And the only tool that I was able to deal with was a bosonic Springer-boson approach, Minfield-Springer-boson approach. So on each side, you use a bosonic, a boson operator, which create a spin I, a spin sigma at site I. After that, you use your Heisenberg Hamiltonian in the first case, and I will be discussing the point where there is only a first neighbor interaction and also the phase diagram around. And the Hamiltonian is that. It could be written exactly in terms of quadratic form of this bond operator. It's important to look at these two bond operators. The first one just creates a singlet between site I and G when acting on the vacuum. The second one is it's a boson hopping term. It's very important, in fact, when you look to frustrated magnet to have the two fields. This singlet creation and the boson hopping term. If not, you don't have the good admixture of triplet. And in fact, in this frustrated system with three sublattice physics and spin fluctuation at 100 and spin direction around 120 degrees, you have some admixture of the triplet state. So it's very important to have this one. If you don't put these two fields and you look at the bandwidths of the excitation that you could have obtained in mean field approximation, you find a bandwidth which is twice too large. That was shown in Meteo and Tromper and Manuel work in 2011. And in fact, it has been discussed by Flint and Coleman that the larger limit, the good way to do the larger limit of this theory was to use effectively these two fields. Flint and Coleman calls this the symplectic N limit, because in that limit, if you use these two fields, effectively you don't introduce in the large N limit anti-symplectic operator in the Hamiltonian. That was a too interesting remark, and so we decided that we should have these two fields, and we have been doing the search of ground state of these Hamiltonian, looking only at spin-Lequin ground state, but allowing the possibility to have chiral symmetry breaking phases. So we had to extend the PhD analysis of Wang and Vishnavat. They were just looking at symmetric spill liquid and not at eventually chiral symmetry breaking spill liquid. So indeed the bond field are complex. I've not said also that the number of boson per site is in the mean field approach adjusted in average to 2s. For SO2 it's in average we have one spin by site. And on the left I just give back the classical phase diagram, and on the right I enlarge the range of parameter around the pure Heisenberg model which sits there, and look, and here is the phase diagram. So when introducing this quantum fluctuation in that way, we think that there is a motion of the highly degenerate point, it changes phases, and the point where you just have nearest neighbor interaction sit in the phase which is chiral. This cube, which I called it cube one, and we discuss a bit more. It's sitting. It's not very big difference. It is of the order of 10 to the minus 2, but usually we know that it is at that level that probably is the thing.
Sorry,
the
cube one is a spin liquid phase?
I will show that for certain spin, it is a spin liquid phase. For large spin, this large limit allows to move from large S to small S. In the largest limit, it is a long range ordered phase. In the smallest limit, it is a cubox. It is a chiral spin liquid. Gapped chiral spin liquid. Chiral, yes. Gapped chiral. So, just to forgive you a hint of the numerics and the order of magnitude, here is the difference. It's a difference in free energy. It's a difference in energy because it is at equal zero between the cubic one phase, the chiral phase, and the square root of three phase which has been discussed and which is a competing phase. And in fact, it appears that for any value of the total spin, the chiral phase is slightly more stable or largely more stable than the planar phase. The critical spin at which the system becomes definitely a chiral spin liquid is 0.38. So it's not spin one half. But I could argue with you that the good quantum number is not the spin, but the fluctuation that you have in your model. And in fact, when the spin is that, the fluctuation in large and limit is 3/2 larger than in the normal classical system. So if you just try to figure out what is the mean field theory which has a good value of the fluctuation of the spin, that is 3/2, then you are in this approximation, you are in a spin gap phase, definitely with a gap which is 1 of 10 of 15. So you know, it's the why I say it's in that range of parameters the phase is gapped, and why it is chiral. So it's a bit. I just put here the loop operator. I don't know if you want to have any. I could give you more information. The loop operator which are observable. And you see there that around the hexagon you have a loop operator which has a complex part, which is not real. And here you have a flux, and this is this flux which is neither zero nor pi, which explains that this phase is chiral. You want a small hint on the loop operator? So the loop operator are physical observable, first of all. That is, they are gauge invariant. And they are defined, in fact, in this field approximation. We are out of the Hilbert set space, but themselves are living in the spin Hilbert space. They are physical observers, and this loop operator, we have two bound fields in our problem. We can define a lot different operators. I just consider there the loop operators which are non-trivial in the Carroll, or supposed to be Carroll order spin gap phase, which are this one, which is the A, the B is trivial, it's a pi, as you remember. And so the argument of these loop operators as a flux. So what does it mean? The B operator is very simple. It just means that you are, it's in the bottom of this transparency, and the loop operator defined on the B bound field is just the permutation of the spin around the given loop. And you know that the imaginary part of the permutation of three spin on a triangle, for example, it is exactly the scalar product of the three spin. So these things directly in the large classical limit, it directly measure this loop operator is directly related, or let us say, the argument of this loop operator is directly related to the solid angle, which is sustained by the tip of the spin, of the six spin on the block sphere, on the S2 sphere. And that can be shown very easily. It's a bit more complicated with the singlet, the loop operator with the singlet, but you just have to flip one spin with the others. I'm sorry, there's a dagger. I've moved away from the definition. And it's a solid angle sustained by the spin S1 minus S2, etc. So, and it is because it is this flux, which is this flux, is the argument of this loop operator, which is non-trivial in the cubic one spin liquid, which is the interesting thing, new things for this. And I was saying in the previous transparency that if you look at this formula, which explains the loop operator in terms of permutation of spin, it's a bit complicated for that one, you can immediately see that you can measure this quantity either in the energy of in exact diagonalization. And in fact, it reminds me of a measurement that we had done many years ago. It's archaeology. It was in 1907, and it was on the 27th sample. We measure something a bit different. We measure in the 27 samples there is an exact degeneracy of the ground state. We have been taken out the state that could we have been taken out with the state which definite chirality, and measured in this state the imaginary part of this permutation operator on different loops, small triangle, hexagon, and so on. And we have looked at the way these fluxes was evolving with the length of the contour, L, and with the area in the contour. And here is the result of the exact diagonalization. Here, the curve is this curve. And fitted to the data, it gives R the value of xi, which is of the order of 0.5 lattice steps, or 1, because it was a Bravais lattice step. So it looks relatively fine for small sample. And now I come back to the title of my talk, and after having checking that, which was not, which could be consistent with the exact diagonalization, we tried to look at thermal fluctuation and see what was going on. And what we have seen with this mean-field approach is that when in that range of parameter, the system is a spin liquid, or in that range, it's a spin liquid, it's a chiral phase. And when you increase the temperature, here it's the temperature, and when you increase the temperature, the chiral phase is destabilized in favor of the zero flux phase. That is effectively thermal fluctuation tend to expel the flux from the phase. So, and this temperature at which the flux is expelled from the ground state decreases with the size of S, which means that in this point of view, in the classical limit, as soon as the temperature is epsilon, your system is planar in the square root of 3 square root of 3 phase. This classical limit, it is the square root of 3 square root of 3 phase. So, now here it's a summary of what I've been showing to you, and my last question is it true for the SE2 model that in the large, these short range quantum fluctuations are effective enough to expulse the flux from the zero flux phase? So is it true that here is the Kagome, spin 1/2, Heisenberg system and a simple Z2 spin liquid, or is it a chiral Z2 spin liquid?
Questions? So are you expecting edge modes for that chiral spin liquid phase?
Edge modes. There probably should be edge modes in a.
We really solved a Heisenberg model.
No, we did not. We solved an Heisenberg, an exact model, exact Heisenberg model on a small torus. So I don't expect that the low line levels that we see are edge modes. But you may argue, but I don't expect this. And because there is too much of them already on the problem of.
To see those, you need a flat?
You need a flat open boundary condition.
Would you need to have a complex wave function to allow open symmetry?
Yes. Yes. Yes, in fact, if you do this computation, this mean field computation with REL, that's the reason why SAGEDEC, there was many reasons, but SAGEDEC and all the people before us use the only real bond field, and it's absolutely necessary to have complex bond field in order to take into account the fluxes.
So you showed that as a function of temperature, you go to this planar phase.
Yes.
So what kind of phase transition do you expect? Is it a continuous phase transition? Is it the first order phase transition?
With a mean field approximation, I would not. But suppose that it is correct that the low temperature phase. It may be that this phase transition, that with this phase transition, which is probably first order, I don't know exactly, if we can say something. But it may mimic something which may exist. If the system is effectively chiral, a chiral spin liquid, we might expect that at t equals zero and very low t, there could be a symmetry breaking mechanism which allows the formation of domain in which the chirality has one sign, spontaneous symmetry breaking. And as this scalar chirality variable is an Ising-like variable, we expect it to resist to thermal fluctuation, but to disappear indeed at a finite temperature. It might be, but It's extremely speculative. It might be that this is a phenomenon which destroying the scalar chirality and explains the transition towards a planar zero flux phase. I prefer to call it a zero flux phase because there is fluctuation. It remains a quantum phase.
If you combine the two talks this morning, you saying you're predicting a ferroelectric.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, true. It's true. It was not in. Yes.
To stabilize this phase, the direction you should go, was it the J3?
J3. Yes, to stabilize the phase.
But we haven't looked at that. So has someone looked at the J3 with the exact
diagonal? We have not the whole spectrum because my colleague who is doing the exact diagonalization is Philippe Zinzin, and he was very, very busy, and it's a lot of, with the program that we had, it was a very clever program, but it is written up for Tron. So yes, it takes time for him to go back. So, and I'm unable to, I have tried to run it, but I'm unable to run it. So, we will have it, probably.
This is more of a comment maybe than a question, but I'm a little bit unsure whether I want you to call this chiral spin liquid. So there's a terminology that's used for chiral spin liquid, which is, I think, usually arrived at in the context of slate fermions, where there really is a certain kind of Hall conductance that you can associate with the state.
Mm-hmm.
You get a gap to Dirac fermions, just something like that. That's break time reversal symmetry, and it's a liquid state. But that state, through the arguments that you basically end up with fermions with some film like that levels in the field, you end up with some chiral-like states.
Yes, for
a
little.
I don't a priori see that the state which descends from the bosonic mean field theory actually should have any of states. It's a different thing to say whether you break time reversal symmetry. And whether you have edge states, those are different.
Yes, but if you define chiral spin liquid as, but first of all, there is two. I agree with the
question. It's a question of nomenclature.
Yes, so I agree.
Obvious to me that that's.
What nomenclature would you use?
Time reversal, broken Z2 spin liquid.
Okay, that's nice.
It's a symmetry enriched state or something. I mean, maybe there is. I just don't know of any theoretical work that would show you how to get edge states and such.
Yes, in fact, I think it would be necessary to do a fermionic description of it, but I suspect it is possible. It's only the fact that I wanted to go from the classical limit to the quantum one to see how things were evolving. And
there was a little bit of a question which I wanted to ask, and I don't know whether probably the answer is no, but I know that so these mean field energetics are not usually considered very reliable from large end, but when you take down the spin in half, somewhat more reliable are variational projected wave function.
Absolutely. We try to project.
The Sigmund Gronich did some studies, I think, of these bosonic.
We try to project the ground state for spin 1/2, but it's permanent and not a determinant, which is a bit more complex to compute. And for 12 spin, it gives exactly the same energy as the exact ground state. For 36, we were not able to know. It was the end of the thesis of Laura, and she was not able to converge to have. So I think it would be important, sure. But the question of the behavior and the picture of the 36 exact diagonalization sample was for me some hint that it might be not so stupid. But I agree that it's just a speculation. It's a speculation around.
Have you calculated the correlations on the 36 cells?
We have it. They are small. And but in fact, when you realize that if it is that kind of physics which is obtained, we have only 3 points, because in 36 we have only 3 hexagons. So but he did not take the good one.
Oh.
He takes the correlation. He takes the small triangle. And on the small triangle in that approach, there is no chirality. So I will try to figure out who will help me to give a better name.
Any more questions?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Thank you.